This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Humans love their dogs, but they don't always understand them. Duke researcher Brian Hare claims that man's best friend has long been misunderstood and underestimated. He says that dogs are among the most extraordinary animals on the planet, and they're more like us than we ever realized. In fact, they have a kind of genius. Brian Hare is associate professor of evolutionary anthropology at Duke University and co-author of a new book, The Genius of Dogs, How Dogs Are Smarter Than You Think. Brian, welcome. Good to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be back, Frank.
We know that dogs are smart. They do extraordinary things. They're on Letterman all the time. And so how? What is it that they're doing that we didn't know?
Well, I think what science has contributed to this, I mean, everybody who has a dog, I mean, is going to be quick to be excited to tell you how smart their dog is, probably, or maybe how their dog is not smart. But I think where science has really contributed here is we've been able to compare dogs to different species. And that's where you see where they're remarkable. Science had not been particularly interested in dogs until about 10 years ago. And then we made a remarkable discovery, which is that relative to chimpanzees, bonobos, and even wolves, dogs are very, very skilled at reading our gestures. So you point, you look in a different direction. They can use that information to solve all sorts of problems.
So, and it's inferential thinking. I think you talk about that, and that's the key difference between that and, say, the genius of a bird that can find its way tens of thousands of miles back and forth each winter.
Right. So that's the other contribution here is that you might think that dogs have to slowly learn things and they have to be trained to do everything they do. But no, they actually are prepared to come into the world to actually imagine the solutions to problems they've never seen before. And, you know, they're able to make inferences.
So, and talk about this, the test that sort of demonstrated that dogs can actually make inferences in the way that children begin to infer answer the right answer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the simplest game that really illustrates dogs making an inference is imagine you hide food in one of two places, and then you show the dog where the food is not. Well, for them to then choose the correct answer, they have to say, well, because I know it's not there, it must be in the other place. And many dogs are capable of doing that.
We do that, and you compare that to children who can, for instance, they may know the names of a few colors, but if you say, if they've never heard the word chromium before, but they know red, and you've got a red and a green, and you say, show me the chromium block that isn't red. Mm-hmm. They'll take the chromium block, even though they didn't know it.
That's right. And so that's a case where kids learn words very rapidly by making inferences, and they infer the meaning of a novel sound they've never heard before, and they'll label an object with that novel sound. Dogs, we've discovered, do that too, and they're the only other species that we've discovered so far that are capable of that. So it's remarkable that, you know, a couple of the things that we think are really special about our species, reading gestures, learning words, it ends up dogs have a very similar skill set.
And we have tested this in other animals that we think can more or less communicate and understand, in dolphins and in chimps and that sort of thing.
Right, and so usually when people report, especially the word learning finding, most people focus on the fact that that they're animals that can learn so many words. But actually, truthfully, that's not that impressive. What's really impressive is how they learn it. And the fact that some dogs learn words through making an inference is really impressive. We're not talking about training. Literally on the first trial of hearing a new word and seeing a new object, they learn that that label goes with that object. That's remarkable.
And what's interesting, too, and you point out in the book, is that we, for some reason, stopped looking for this kind of thing in dogs. I mean, we started out with a movie star named Fellow. And maybe you can tell us that story and how long ago that was. And then dogs just sort of dropped off our radar.
Right. Well, I mean, actually, that discovery of word learning could have been made in 1928. There was a dog named Fellow who had a very sizable vocabulary. Some scientists went to go look at him, and they actually said, wow, this dog's doing something really flexible and interesting. But essentially, psychology turned its back on dogs. And part of it was because conceptually, people were convinced that basically all animals learn the same way. And if they all learn the same way, we might as well just study rats and pigeons. What do we need dogs for? But since then, we take a cognitive approach, we think evolutionarily, and we realize that dogs evolved with humans, and probably the reason that they have these remarkable abilities is because they need them, and that's what the secret to their success is.
Have they always needed them, or is this a function and a result of domestication?
Well, the idea is that this is a product of domestication, and dogs self-domesticating themselves, actually. That's sort of the twist on the story. I had to go lots of crazy places to figure that out, but basically basically, the idea is that dogs chose us, and because of that, they had to get friendlier, they had to get interested in people, and as an accident, as a byproduct, they got smarter.
How do we know they chose us?
Well, basically, we have several lines of evidence for that. One is that we know that if you select intentionally animals to get friendlier or nicer, they actually get really good at using gestures. So we know that from work with the foxes in Siberia. I actually went to Siberia to figure that out. And we also know because imagine the context of a hunter-gatherer or an early agriculturalist saying to its family, saying to his or her family, hey, I know what we need around here. We need some wolves. We need some wolves because, you know, life is so easy and, you know, let's get some wolves in the group and it'd be really fun if they could be around our children. And that's really what it would have taken. And domestication is genetic evolution. So I think that's implausible.
Well, I do have an alternate possibility, and that is that somebody decides to take on or to bring up an orphaned pup, a wolf, and that thing is pretty friendly and then proves useful. So while you wouldn't think to yourself, let's bring a wolf around the campfire to watch the kids, when you raise it from a pup, you might think, these things could be useful.
So that's sort of the traditional idea. Though, again, the problem with that, though, is the wolf grows up and domestication requires genetic change. So you'd have to, over many generations, grow adult wolves, breed them, and then continually select the nice ones. But in the meantime, you're dealing with a lot of adult wolves.
Right.
So it's much easier to assume that as humans settle, wolves basically said, there's all this garbage. It'd be really easy to, you know, just make a living since humans eat the same thing they eat. And the nice, tolerant wolves are the ones that do better surviving.
Only the human troops that had the wisdom to choose the mildest dogs, wolves, survived. I'm sorry. we're not going to go down this path anymore. I'm done with it. But that does raise the question about whether wolves are as smart as dogs when it comes to this kind of thing.
Well, and that's the fun thing is, wolves absolutely can make inferences, and they're very good at solving problems on their own. And that's been demonstrated repeatedly in the literature. We review in The Genius of Dogs all the studies comparing wolves and dogs. And what you see repeatedly is when wolves are on their own, they're remarkable in, for instance, going around a detour. There's a barrier. They got to get around the barrier to get the food. They're really, really good at that. And they can solve it very quick. Dogs, on the other hand, are horrible. In some cases, 10 times longer to learn how to solve the problem.
I was surprised to read that when they tested the wolf against the wolf was much quicker at picking out, you know, that the white block had the food behind it.
Right. So that's another one where you would think that because dogs are so easy to train, that's because they are really good at forming associations. But when they've been compared to wolves, they're horrible relative to wolves in forming associations. So go back to the barrier problem. If a dog is left on its own, it takes them 10 times longer to solve the problem. But if you show them the solution, a human goes around the barrier. They can do it on trial one. And so they don't even make a mistake. So I think that's the secret to their success, where they can't solve a lot of problems on their own. They can very quickly use human information to solve problems that other animals can't solve.
This brings us to, what's that, Lassie? Timmy's in the well? Show us. The idea that the dog is going to save you or perhaps pick out the right or even understand the nature of your difficulty is pretty interesting, particularly when it came to the bookcase test.
Okay, well, so here's the thing. Dogs are vapid when it comes to understanding physics. So they do not understand gravity. So Timmy down the well, I don't know that Lassie would really understand that he's down, can't get up. That would be difficult for her. People have actually done experiments where an accident occurs. Someone supposedly in quotes hurt. A bookcase actually falls on somebody and they're sitting there crying for help and their pet dog is next to them. The question is, what does the dog do? Does the dog run to go find somebody who actually is standing about 100 feet away? And the answer is no, the dog just sort of stands around. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that no dog would ever ask for help. And there are so many great stories and anecdotes about dogs doing amazing things. So I'm not saying that dogs don't ever help people. They absolutely do. But in the case of the science we have and our knowledge of what they understand about the world, I think there are many cases where they couldn't possibly understand you're in trouble.
Well, and it would be interesting to know if the bookcase really fell on the owner and they were hurt, because dogs do have a genius, and most dog owners will report this, about knowing when you're sick. And their behavior changes. They become much more protective, less likely to leave you. So they know when you're in distress.
Well, and that's one of the new jobs dogs have now, is actually detecting all sorts of whether you're about to have a seizure, or people who have melanoma, or even now colon cancer. Dogs can, just with your breath, detect whether you have colon cancer. So absolutely, it's not that dogs can't ever help you or know when you're in distress or trouble, but when it comes to like physical injury, I think that's hard for them.
And they won't necessarily recommend chemo. That's got to be up to somebody else. So, but they do know when yours. And training is the other interesting thing. And maybe you can shed light on the differences in training and how it's not the same from dog to dog by talking about your dog Milo in Germany.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I learned by being a dog owner is that, you know, I grew up with a Labrador, and Labradors are, you know, quick to please and excited to find ways to make you happy and just wonderful dogs. And I got a dog that looked a lot like a Labrador, but it ended up he was part Chow Chow. Now, Chow Chows end up being one of the more wolf-like breeds genetically. And woo, he was difficult to train. What a wonderful dog he was. But that's where I learned that there's a lot of individual variability in how we can approach working with our best friends.
Now, he got easier to train after you got him fixed.
Yeah. Now, that is that was sort of a surprise, because when you go to the literature, it's not always the case that a dog that's fixed will be easier to train. But the take-home message there is that it's not necessarily when your dog isn't listening to you that they don't understand what you're trying to tell them, that they haven't learned it. In the case of Milo, he had such a high level of androgens circling in his body that he just couldn't listen no matter what, because when we took him outside, all he cared about was marking and being territorial. And he did know what we were saying, because as soon as he was fixed, he literally the next day was the most obedient dog I've ever had.
So he'd been listening the whole time. This was my argument all the way through elementary school, by the way. I'm listening. I got it. I'll know it on the test. But luckily, it didn't take that radical procedure, by the way, to get me through school. I'm talking today with Brian Hare. The Genius of Dogs is his book, along with his wife, Vanessa Woods. So tell us, the other interesting thing to me is that dogs can spot a cheater.
Yes.
A mile away, or
yes,
at least half a mile.
Yes. So dogs – so one of the things for people that I think is exciting that we talk about in the book is there's a big literature on feral dog behavior. So dogs that live without human interference. And when people have watched those feral dogs, they cooperate to defend territories and they bark at each other. They don't actually kill each other or injure each other, but they'll bark at each other and try to intimidate one another. And what you see is that a lot of times when they're cooperating to intimidate the other group – there'll be certain dogs that'll kind of hang back in the back and let the other dogs go up. And the other pack members really notice that. And so there are ways that people have seen that basically individuals can tell when.
Because they're going to not be hanging out once it's time to dine.
That's right.
Right. They're going to be at the trough when the meat is ready, but they're hanging back and the dog knows that.
That's right.
Well, how do they, in the wild, what do they do about that? I mean, they just tolerate it and. Do they let the freeloaders, eat?
Do they let the freeloaders eat? Well, I think the in the situation with dogs, what happens is where dogs are amazing is they realize where there's not room to cheat. And so there's some context where, you know, they make sure that they protect the pack when, you know, they're up against another pack where they need to, defend each other.
So they know who to count on and who not to.
That's right.
In the critical moments. And can they detect this among humans?
Then? Well, now that's the fun thing is there is some research now that shows that dogs watching two people interacting, they're actually sizing us up and seeing who is sort of a friendly type of person, who might be somebody who's not so friendly, and they tend to prefer the really friendly person.
Now, obviously, as the testing and the research on wolves suggests, there's something biological about this. I mean, the other way to look at this is that cats are also domestic, and they don't show any of these same signs, right?
Right. Well, and exactly. So you can only – evolution can only work with what it's handed. Right. And so in the case of cats, you have a predator that's pretty solitary, and it uses different methods to catch its prey. It's not, particularly cooperative. So, to evolve a cat into a dog-like animal would be very difficult.
So we've got this really remarkable stuff now, a real higher order of thinking, inferential thinking.
Mm-hmm.
This is new. I mean, we didn't really understand this about dogs. So it leads us to the next question. Are they self-aware? Do they know they're here?
Well, So that's where we have some controversy in the literature. So the standard test that has been used traditionally, so with great apes, for instance, bonobos, chimpanzees, you put them in front of a mirror and can they recognize themselves by exploring their body, let's say looking at their teeth that they couldn't see without the mirror. Great apes do that type of thing. Dogs, it ends up, they tend to look behind the mirror or they continue to act as if it's another dog. So right now, I don't think we have any good experimental evidence.
So they would literally, if they saw the reflection in the glass, say, how much is that doggy in the window? Because yes. They didn't know it ain't them. Well, that's great. So, but in relationship, they certainly understand their relationships. And, of course, people love their dogs. So now you're the co-founder of Dog Nation. Is it – what is it?
Dognition.com.
Dognition.com. You just launched that yesterday. Tell us how that works.
Well, so basically, because we've been doing all the science, the book sort of wraps together everything we've learned in the last 10 years in this, you know, period of sort of our revolution and understanding of dogs. But, you know, even at Duke, where we have all these wonderful people who've brought their pet dogs in locally, what we've learned is people love to participate in these games. Dogs love to participate in games to understand their cognition. But what we really wanted to be able to do is provide this opportunity to everybody. Because what we know is different dogs are different, just like people. And different dogs rely on different types of intelligence to make their way through the world. And that can really explain why they behave the way that they do. And if we could learn that about the dogs, what is the intelligence they're relying on? Is this a really empathic dog? Is this a dog that relies on gestures? Is this a dog that has a lot of memory? That could really help enrich our lives. And so that's what DogNation.com is all about, is taking some of the best games that we've developed to understand dogs better, providing that for people so they can play it with their own dog in their own home. And I think it's going to be a delight because people are going to see their dog in a whole new way.
So wait a minute, what do you do? Am I rating my dog? I'm playing. How would it work?
Well, you go to the website, dognition.com, and basically there's videos that give you nice instructions on how to play some of the games that we've developed as a field on dog psychology. So you can play these games, and there's no right or wrong answer. The question is, what's the strategy that your dog uses to say, let's say if we hide food in one of two places, and then I show the dog where the food's hidden, but I point to the other location. Well, a dog that relies on its memory is going to go to the food. A dog that relies on you is going to go to where you point. So what does your dog do? What is the intelligence that your dog is using in its everyday life?
And then you're going to rate the dogs?
Well, all the dogs. So once you test your dog is then compared to every other dog that has participated, and you get to find out what your dog looks like relative to the rest of the dog world.
I get to compare my dog. So you've had a million hits, right?
We have. And so it's going to be really exciting because people are going to – it's really going to lead people to have a better understanding of their dog. And if you know that your dog is one that, you know, actually it doesn't have that great of a memory, well, you know, it's not being disobedient because it doesn't want to do what it's supposed to be doing. It forgets what you told it.
Well, then do you have links to stupiddog.com for how to deal with your puppy that didn't rate so high? Because that could be rough.
Well, the idea is not that they're high or low dogs. It's that, well, let's identify your dog's cognitive style.
All right. So what does this mean for me? Do we know anything about human behavior from what you found here?
Oh, and you mean with DogNation.com?
Well, and all the research.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think what we've learned a lot about humans in terms of what might make our own species successful, because ultimately civilization is about being incredibly tolerant. And by looking at how dogs evolve to be more friendly and to be more tolerant, we realize that, you know, evolution isn't always about survival of the fittest in terms of being more aggressive. Evolution actually often favors friendliness and tolerance. And so, you know, really it's helped us think about our own species and our own species' unique genius as well.
You should send copies of this literature to state capitals around the nation.
Well, not only that, but, you know, dogs, while we've had a recession, dogs have actually had an explosion in the jobs they're doing right now. So I think we should have a dog on all these committees because they have a lot to teach us.
Yeah, but they're not getting paid, so maybe it's a bad example. Brian, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brian Hare, Associate Professor of Evolutionary Anthropology at Duke University, co-author of The Genius of Dogs, How Dogs Are Smarter Than You Think, and co-founder of DogNition.com. Go there now and find out just how smart your doggy is. Radio Theater live on the State of Things. Stay tuned.